Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Connecting this morning with Kevin Dillon, who is the executive director of Connecticut Airport Authority managing Bradley Airport. Kevin, thanks for being here this morning. How are you?
Great. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Well, first and foremost, I know that the airports have been putting safety protocols in place really since the beginning. What does it look like? Walk me through Bradley Airport for me and my listeners who have not been since the pandemic. What does it look like right now?
Well, I think first and foremost, folks need to understand that we have substantially stepped up the cleaning and sanitizing protocols throughout the airport, with certainly a heavy emphasis on high touch areas such as the ticket counters. But people also need to understand that when you enter the terminal building, you are required to wear a mask. All airlines require passengers to wear masks to board the aircraft and while in flight as well. Passengers will also see that we've installed plexiglass barriers to protect workers as well as to protect passengers as they interact at ticket counters. And they'll also note that we are enforcing social distancing at the security checkpoint lines as people are waiting to pass through TSA screening. At the TSA screening, they'll also see that passengers now will handle their own boarding pass to minimize the contact back and forth between TSA officers. And then they'll also see that once they pass through TSA screening, we've made many adjustments to the concession areas throughout the terminal building. Many concessions, unfortunately, are still closed in compliance with executive orders. But even those concessions that are open, there are substantial changes regarding seating to enforce the social distancing. So many, many different things as you navigate through Bradley Airport.
What does it look like at Bradley? You know, we went from seeing about, it was something like 80 to 90% of our commercial airlines just dropping flights. We weren't seeing flights happening. Now, all of a sudden, you know, we are starting to see the opposite. Things are picking back up again. So what was that like at Bradley to go from kind of a ghost town to now you're starting to see traction again?
Yeah, at the start of the pandemic, we were actually down 98% in terms of passengers. Traffic as compared to a similar period a year ago. Just this past week, that number has been reduced down to about 70 to 75%. So still a substantial drop in passenger traffic, but we have made a bit of progress since the start of the pandemic. That's why we are somewhat concerned with the quarantine now being put in place for travelers coming from certain states. We do believe the gains that we've made over the past few months are going to be reversed by the quarantine.
Actually, you make a very good point. That's true. The airport's probably going to be hurting because a lot, you know, the governor is saying if you have family in other states, leave them home for now. And that's true. That is going to impact you unless you've got workers who need to fly frequently for their jobs. You're right. That would take a hit to the airport. So how are you guys even holding up knowing that you may go through another wave of this?
Well, you may be aware that the federal government passed the CARES Act, that in that bill, it allocated $10 billion of aid for airports across the country. When that was divided up, Bradley's share of that federal aid was about $28 million.
Oh, wow.
Just
okay.
To put that in perspective, $28 million covers our operating expenses and debt service for a period of about 3 months. All right. So, as this pandemic still goes on, it's going to be a very, very big challenge for the airport to be able to make ends meet because we don't accept tax revenue at the airport. We live and die by our own expenses and revenues that we generate at the airport. Fortunately, when the Airport Authority was created a number of years ago, we built some healthy financial reserves. So between the CARES Act money and the financial reserves, we're okay for the time being. But if passenger traffic doesn't start to return, doesn't start to pick up, we are going to be faced with some financial challenges because there's a direct correlation naturally between the number of passengers and the amount of revenue that the airport's generating.
Sure. Speaking with Kevin Dillon this morning, he's the executive director of the Connecticut Airport Authority, and the Connecticut Airport Authority manages Bradley Airport. Now, what are your thoughts, Kevin, on testing on site? I know the governor said that he's in talks with you guys about having people, when they fly in, have testing done, boom, right there when they land in the airports. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we're very much in favor of setting up a testing site right at the airport. We think it would be a great alternative to give folks as opposed to quarantining for 14 days. You know, a 14-day quarantine from what it stands now is 16 states effectively shuts down business travel, right? No one's going to be able to fly into the state, quarantine for 14 days, and then conduct business. So we think it's a great alternative if people can fly into the airport, be tested, get a negative test, and then avoid the 14-day quarantine period. So that's something that we've discussed with the governor. We've had some conversations with the Department of Public Health, and we're hopeful that they're able to come to grips with offering something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know we had a few people. That's actually one of the questions we're talking to our audience about today, if they've canceled their summer plans or if they're not having family fly in. Because as of right now, like the governor said, unless you're an essential worker, he's making you quarantine. But there are questions of, well, why can't, if I test negative the second I touch down or right before I come in, if I have that proof that I have a negative test, why can't I bypass it? So you're in favor of that.
Absolutely. I mean, there are questions about incubation periods and, you know, exactly when that test should be conducted.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that these are protocols that I'd like to think the Department of Public Health can work out, and that we'd be able to offer this as an alternative. I think, you know, certainly for the future of the airport, we're going to need to be looking at things like this. Otherwise, we're never going to be able to recover that passenger traffic. And, you know, people look at it sometimes and say, well, so what, you know, if somebody can't take their vacation. The airport is fundamental to economic development throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a viable transportation system, including a very viable airport, your economic development initiatives are simply going to fail. So it's very, very important that we maintain the health of the airport, not only for operations now, but as we look to the future and economic recovery throughout the state. You know, airlines, as they emerge from this pandemic, are going to be much smaller operations. They're scaling back. It's going to take a long time for airlines to get back to the point where they were pre-pandemic. So we're going to be competing with airports across the country for some very limited airline activity. And if we have to contend with quarantines or high costs at the airport, airlines have other options where they can put those limited airline assets. So it is something that we're very concerned about and something that we have our eye on.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate you breaking this down for us. Really amazing insight this morning. And yeah, I'm praying that we can take care of our airports. And certainly, like you said, I'm on board with the testing on site. I think that could be a really great thing for both you guys and for travelers. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It was great to be with you.
Absolutely. Just ahead of the 4th of July weekend, and we're checking in right now with Sergeant Robert Derry, Troop G of the Connecticut State Police. And Sergeant Derry, thanks for being here this morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Melissa. Getting ready to ramp up for the 4th of July weekend and looking forward to it with the nice weather coming our way.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that was going to be my first question. So you guys are upping patrols for the weekend.
Yeah, what we do every significant holiday period is we receive funding for highway safety. And what we do is every state police barracks, we staff additional troopers, really primarily to enforce the DUI laws across the state. And this is obviously something that's very important to us. And our number one goal is to make sure it's safe for everybody to travel. So, yeah, we will have additional troopers working out there above and beyond our normal patrol force.
And is that going to be out on the major highways you're talking about where we'll see more troopers?
So at Troop G itself, yes, that we will be out between I-95 and the Merritt Parkway, Route 25, Route 8, and Bridgeport. So they'll be out there roping around. You'll be seeing, you'll hopefully be seeing a lot of lights flashing, enforcing the laws and make sure you know, everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. That's our number one goal.
What are you looking for? I know whenever I think about these certain holidays, I immediately think drinking and driving, but distracted driving, I would assume, is on your radar as well?
Really, all the motor vehicle statutes are what we're looking for. However, yes, DUI is obviously one of the most dangerous driving issues out there, right along with the distracted driving. So, yeah, those are first and foremost for us. Well, you know, everything, you know, the seatbelt laws, and I think we spoke a couple weeks ago about the speeds of motorists really increasing amidst this whole pandemic. So our troopers have been out there really working hard to bring the speeds collectively down, and we've been pretty successful with that. So we'll be out there looking for the reckless operators as well throughout the weekend. And, you know, we just ask the public to, you know, pay attention to the laws. Please do what you're doing. Do the right thing, because we don't want anybody, absolutely anybody, to get hurt. And however, history has showed us that necessary is not always the case.
And you just bring up speeding. I was wondering if we could get an update on that. So you think that we've seen our numbers go down for speeding records, or we're about the same, or it's under control? What is the update?
Well, I can tell you from my personal perspective, I've been out there with the troopers trying to work on this effort. And I have seen the speeds drop down a little bit. I won't say they're slow. People still speed out there. But there's speeding, and then there's reckless driving. Mm-hmm. You know, in the state of Connecticut, on I-95, the Merritt Parkway, any limited access highway, any speed over the speed of 85 miles an hour, so it'd be 86 miles an hour and faster, that's no longer speeding. That's considered reckless driving. And that is not a payable fine. That is an automatic court appearance for the violator. So we have been seeing a lot of speeds in the reckless driving category, albeit they've been slowed down. I think I spoke to you previously that when we first started with this enforcement campaign to slow down the traffic out there, I personally was seeing speeds 112, 106, I-95 coming through Milford. And I will say I haven't personally been seeing those crazy high speeds. However, we still get them, you know, in the 80s and 90s, which are completely unacceptable.
Sure. Speaking with Sergeant Robert Derry of Troop G, the Connecticut State Police. And Sergeant Derry, I was curious about this. Obviously, you're not a fortune teller, so I don't expect like an exact answer. But I thought I'd love to get your opinion on this. Are you anticipating numbers, you know, for either drinking and driving, reckless driving, distracted driving, I guess enforcement numbers. Are you expecting those to be worse this year because it's the first time we've had the 4th of July weekend during a pandemic, or the fact that we have no fireworks displays, especially in Fairfield and New Haven counties, are you thinking that's going to actually be helpful in keeping the numbers down?
Well, there's no way to really predict other than what past history has shown, but obviously with the world that we are currently living in, a lot of people have been feeling cooped up for the last number of months. And this is a big weekend for people to get out and try to enjoy it and celebrate the country that we live in. And, you know, this lends to a lot of backyard get-togethers and drinking occurs. You know, so I don't know if we're going to see the same amount of traffic as we normally would, because we also, this is a big travel weekend for people to go towards the beaches and, mm-hmm. and vacations. And we all know with all these travel restrictions and everything going on that a lot of those have been canceled. So, you know, we may not see the number of traffic out there coming through with the state, but I know that the violations, you know, that never really slows down. I kind of, when I talked to folks, I said the state police and law enforcement in general, we never have to worry about customers. We have plenty of them.
Sure.
And there's always business. You know, there's always things that need to be done. You know, in a perfect world, I would love to see everybody driving correctly all the time. I wouldn't want to have to stop anybody. But unfortunately, the people don't do that, and it leads us to have to step in and take enforcement action. So I will tell you, the numbers that we did last year collectively across the state, we had over the holiday weekend in 2019 of the 4th of July, we had 242 motor vehicle accidents. Unfortunately, one of those was a fatality motor vehicle accident. And I'm not sure exactly where that was, but that was not in the Troop G area. I do know that. We arrested 37 DWI violators, issued 1,308 motor vehicle citations, and that includes reckless driving, speeding, distracted driving, and 568 warnings. So you can see collectively as a state police agency, we were pretty busy last 4th of July. And I would anticipate we're probably going to be give or take around that same number, maybe a little bit less, because of the traffic thing we just talked about.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you're just tuning in, those were the 2019 numbers for the 4th of July weekend that Sergeant Derry was just sharing and, you know, saying that we may be on track with that again this year. So we'll see what ends up happening. Now, before I let you go, Sergeant Derry, I did want to talk about the move over law, because even though it is in place and it's been there, I think people still struggle with that and understanding that that is, in fact, a law and you need to follow it. First of all, what is it and why should people be more put their attention to it? Because I think we're still missing that point on the roads.
Oh, I 100% agree with you, Melissa. The move over law has been put in place a few years ago. And if you see a state trooper, a police officer, an ambulance, a tow truck, DOT on the side of the highway with their lights flashing, you are required by state law to slow down. And if safe to do so, move over to the adjoining lane. So if you see a trooper on the side of the road in the right shoulder, you're in the right lane, you see the lights flashing, you need to slow down, and if you can, move over to that center lane. We know that that's not always possible, but you do have to slow down coming by that emergency vehicle. I will tell you, when I stop cars on the highway, all the time do I see people in that right lane when that center lane is completely open. So I think people aren't really thinking about it. I think that people are oblivious to it sometimes, especially when you're coming from out of state. However, I do believe that every state in the United States does have the move over law on their state law book. So it's nothing that's new to Connecticut. It's not new to anybody else. But, you know, we do our best to get the word out. I know I work very, very closely with the AAA folks to try to get the messaging out. And, you know, unfortunately, the education is there. It's been put out there. You know, we have to just carve out the time and to really concentrate on the enforcement side of this, which we don't want to have to stop people for this, but we have to, because the majority of our troopers getting hurt out there, especially down here at Troop G, which is one of the busiest travel areas in the state, we have troopers getting hit all the time, as well as DOT trucks. And unfortunately, I'm sure you're aware, a couple months ago, we had a tow truck operator killed on the Merritt Parkway mm-hmm. on the side of the right shoulder.
That was terrible.
So it's very significant. It's very dangerous. And it's something that we do our best to get the word out and to enforce when we're able to do so.
All right. Well, Sergeant Robert Derry, I really appreciate your insight. Stay safe this weekend, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
Great. Thanks, Melissa. Have a great weekend.
Checking in with David Mestre of the Discovery Museum. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing well. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So tell me a little bit about this Artemis mission. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, this is great. So this is a NASA's mission to return humans to the moon. So it's a goal where NASA is working very hard to get all of the systems together so that we can actually return to the moon by the year 2024. At least that's our target.
Yeah,
and so this is named after Artemis, which is the sister of Apollo, and it's sort of a little homage to the Apollo space program.
So I was going to say, I'm also seeing with this mission that the first woman lunar astronaut is expected to be part of this?
That's correct, yeah. So the reason why we've actually chosen the name Artemis, the sister of Apollo, is because this is the first time we're actually going to land a woman on the moon.
I think that's awesome. Now, this is completely separate from the news we have been talking about with the most recent launch, correct?
That's, well, you know, so it's all kind of connected.
Okay.
So the first, the launch that we had recently with SpaceX mm-hmm. was a commercial partner to send astronauts to low Earth orbit to the International Space Station.
Right.
But SpaceX is actually coming back to help with even this lunar mission. So right now, there are three main parts that NASA is really concentrating and working on very hard. And that is updating all of the ground systems at Cape Canaveral so that we can accommodate some bigger rockets to launch the hardware to the moon and back. A new rocket called the Space Launch System, and that's going to be dubbed the world's biggest rocket, and that's going to allow us to carry all this hardware. And then a new spaceship that's designed for deep space exploration, especially this new lunar exploration.
Wow. So why now? Why make the goal by 2024 to return astronauts to the moon?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I think, you know, part of it is that, you know, NASA decided that if we could step away from doing the low Earth orbit operations, you know, like a space shuttle program and all of that, that would free up a lot of resources to be able to really kind of concentrate on really pushing further into deep space, especially especially returning to the moon and maybe even going to Mars. So, for example, you know, they're working on all of these different systems, but the lander, the lander that will take the astronauts from their spaceship down to the lunar surface, they decided to actually contract that out to private companies. So there's like three companies right now that are working on a human-rated landing system. And one of those companies happens to be SpaceX. So you may see sometime in the future that our human astronauts will be landing on the surface of the moon with a private partner, SpaceX or Blue Origin, which is the company out of Jeff Bezos of Amazon, and another company called Dynetics. So we've got three companies right now that are all competing to be the landing systems for the new human-rated space exploration of the moon.
Wow, that's really amazing. This is David Mestre of the Discovery Museum talking a little bit about the Artemis mission. And the goal here is to have NASA return astronauts to the moon, which would include the first female lunar astronaut. And I just want to differentiate here, David, that we've seen female astronauts before. It's not like that's unheard of. But why so long till we saw a female actually step on the moon?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the reason was that, you know, getting to the moon is just expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you look at in sort of like today's dollars, you know, a trip to the International Space Station with SpaceX is probably around $50 million.
Wow.
Russian spacecraft probably in the $80 to $90 million. To send astronauts to the moon, you're probably looking at almost $400 to $500 million for
wow.
that ticket. So, and that's mostly because it's so much further away. You know, to the ground and to the International Space Station, that's about 240 miles up. To the moon is 240,000 miles.
Wow.
And so, you know, we're taking a much bigger leap, and so our hardware has to be able to withstand the trip, the extreme environment, and then we need specialized hardware to actually take our astronauts and land them safely on the moon. And these landing systems that we're designing, these are going to be landing systems that, in the first generation of them, you know, we'll be able to live in the lander for about a week. And that'll extend our time on the moon. But eventually, though, we want to be able to build structures on the moon, and the landers will just take us there. And then we can stay for as long as 6 months to a year on the lunar surface.
Wow, that's amazing. And I can't even imagine how much it's going to be to fly to Mars when that happens.
Even a quantum leap beyond that. Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
But I think what the moon does that's really important is it's staging ground for all of the technology development to get us to Mars. So, you know, we kind of call all of the operations around the moon and even a little further than that as the proving ground for all that technology.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're going to really test things. You know, what kinds of new types of spacesuits can we develop? What kinds of new mission modalities are we looking at? How are we going to work together for extended periods of time away from the planet Earth? All of that will be proven in these operations of the near future.
That's incredible. And my understanding is the mission manager behind the Artemis program is going to do a live stream, and that's going to be on the Discovery Museum's website coming up next week. Tell us about that.
Yeah, now it's actually going to be at July 14th, and it's going to be at 4 p.m. So if you can go to our Facebook page, we've actually got an event that you can, you know, show some interest or say that you're going to, you know, attend. And then on that event page, we've got a link that you can actually click the link, and you can actually submit your question to Mike Serafin, who's the mission manager for the entire Artemis program.
Cool.
And July 14th, we're actually going to have him live, and he's going to take some questions from Facebook, you know, people that are watching on Facebook. He's going to take some questions from that pool of questions that you've submitted using that link from our Facebook page. And then we're going to hear really from our horse's mouth here, you know, all the stuff that's going to be really happening with the Artemis mission. And so, you know, we scored Mike Serafin, which is really kind of cool to get. So that's what Discovery Museum could do.
I love that. Well, what is the Discovery Museum website and Facebook if people don't know it already?
Yeah, so the website is www.discoverymuseum.org. And if you look for Discovery Museum and Planetarium on Facebook, you should be able to find us.
All right. David Mestre, always a wealth of knowledge. I learned so much talking to you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and take care. And I hope to see you on the Facebook Live.
Yeah, July 14th. I won't forget that. That is my husband's birthday. So I
oh,
will be
excellent.
I'll be sure to watch with Chase. Absolutely. We'll remember that. Thank you.
Excellent. I'll try and see if I can get Mike to say happy birthday to you.
Aw, you're sweet. Thank you so much, David.
All righty. Hey, take care.